Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Peter Haller, there were two issues to be decided by Swiss voters on November 28th. One was an initiative to automatically expel convicted criminal foreigners from the country. The other issue involved setting a standard minimum rate of taxation for wealthy people all over the country. First, let's turn to the expulsion issue. The proposal was launched by the right-wing Swiss People's Party, and it was accepted by a clear majority. What are its main provisions?
First of all, one has to say that criminal foreigners can be deported from Switzerland already under present law. At the same time, the Swiss jail population is made up to 60% of foreigners who, in fact, only make up 22% of the resident population. So in other words, there's a disproportionately large number of foreigners in Swiss jails. Hardly any of them are deported for a variety of reasons, and this proposal by the Swiss People's Party, now accepted by the voters, would automatically deport anybody convicted of a crime which would call for a jail sentence. Now, it's very hard to get a jail sentence in Switzerland. The minimum is you need to be jailed for at least 18 months to actually have to go to jail. So in other words, anybody who commits murder, rape, crimes of violence would automatically, under this new initiative, be deported from Switzerland.
So in effect, then, what does this now accepted proposal mean? I mean, in practical terms, how does it translate into concrete terms?
Well, we don't know yet, because in fact, under the Swiss law regarding initiatives, Parliament now has 5 years to draft legislation regulating the outcome of this initiative. In other words, another 5 years, they can take time to fine-tune the whole issue as to who is to be deported and where to and under what circumstances.
But it seems the message from the electorate is very clear. We do not like the status quo. It's got to be changed, and we want to toughen up.
That is exactly my view, that basically the electorate is telling the government to really start doing something and not shilly-shallying or any wishy-washy future anymore.
I know a lot of people, as you do, with very, very liberal political views, and frankly, in some cases, I was even surprised to hear many of them supporting this initiative. It makes me suspect that a lot of normally liberal voters perhaps secretly supported the initiative at the polls.
Yes, I think that happens quite often. In fact, with this particular initiative, you can say that 30% of the electorate vote for the Swiss People's Party anyway, and I presume the other 20-25% came from the center parties, the radicals, the liberals, and the Christian Democrats.
There's a concern on the part of some that the acceptance of this expulsion, this rather tough expulsion proposition, will go against European human rights and EU regulations, which Switzerland has accepted. Do you see this as a problem?
Well, the Swiss People's Party has already accepted that it might be a problem and has already indicated that they are ready to negotiate, especially with regard to the fine-tuning of the legislation, which has to go through Parliament. The other aspect is that the Swiss ministries will be going to Brussels to explain what it exactly means, this initiative, and the outcome, the same as they did when the minaret ban was issued last year. But on the other hand, one also has to see that the European Union has such incredible problems at the moment, not least with the euro, that I presume this is very much a sideshow.
Just a final point on this. The Swiss Federal Cabinet tabled a counterproposal to the People's Party's initiative, and it was not accepted. Some people thought it had a good chance, but it didn't make it in the end. What do you think went wrong?
Well, the proposal was also adopted by Parliament. It was, in fact, more far-reaching in many ways than the People's Party proposal, because it encompasses more crimes and offences that would be subject to deportation. But also it included a clause on prevention, including better integration of foreigners. It was basically, I think, the counter-proposal was under suspicion of being the same old story with a new label on it. In other words, over-liberal, permissive and nothing very concrete.
Now, the second proposition that was voted on November 28th, which was soundly defeated, called for a standardized minimum rate of taxation in all of Switzerland, especially for the rich. We would call them perhaps the super rich. Now, first we have to point out that the Swiss taxation system is cantonal and not federal or centralistic, as it is in perhaps most other countries. Where does the story go from here?
Interestingly, 6 weeks before the vote, everybody was expecting it to get through. 60% were expected to vote yes. But then industry, commerce, and the centre and right-wing parties suddenly saw the ramifications of this social democrat scheme to tax the super rich at the same level all over the country, thereby basically disempowering, disenfranchising the cantons. And that mobilized a lot of counter power from especially the country areas, also from industry and commerce. Because basically this social democratic legislation runs counter to federalism. And what has been happening in the past 20 or 30 years is that the cantons have been vying with each other to offer better tax deals, especially for the rich and the super rich, including all the Formula One racing drivers, and we all know who else, the very rich people like Mark Rich. And this competition among the cantons, in fact, helped everybody, because basically every canton had to offer a decent cost-benefit ratio to a taxpayer. And they were simply worried on the day of the vote that this power would be taken away from the cantons and also the local communes.
And obviously it's the cantons, particularly in central Switzerland, which have very attractive tax bases for the rich people. There, of course, the opposition was loudest. And in a referendum like this, you needed 2/3 majority of the cantons to pass it, and there was no way that was going to happen.
There was no way that was going to happen. And for instance, the canton of Nidwalden in central Switzerland, which has been going gung-ho for tax breaks for the super rich for the last couple of years, had 80% no, because even the lower paid and the lower tax people in Nidwalden realize that if they drive away the super rich from their canton, the taxes of the lower incomes will also go up to compensate for the shortfall caused by the lack of rich people living in the canton.
So again, to make the point, taxation in Switzerland depends on where you live, and it's administered by the cantons and not the federal government. And so taxes vary from one place to the other, and there's a kind of competition among the cantons.
And also within the cantons, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance,
the communes themselves have different levels.
Very different. For instance, certain suburbs of Bern, the federal capital, there you pay half the tax you would pay where you live out in the country.
That's the communities of Mori and Gumligen.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, a lot of rich people live there. I wonder why.
Well, it's a chicken and the egg. Nobody really knows whether the rich people go to a place because taxes are low, or whether taxes are low because there are many rich people there.
There's been talk over the years about a general harmonization of taxation in Switzerland, not on the issue of the rich only, getting this act together and making it more centralistic. Do you think this is ever going to happen?
Well, interestingly, in the 1970s, there was a referendum in Canton Bern just on this point, and it was accepted that all the communes would have to harmonize their taxes. And that was over 30 years ago, and nothing has happened since. I think harmonization of taxes won't happen if it has to go to a referendum. What is happening now is that there is a sort of federal equity fund, which is filled up by all cantons according to their means. And the rich cantons pay the most into this fund, and the poorest cantons get the most out of it. So the fair taxation is achieved by fair subsidies.
Finally, Peter, in both of the propositions we've been talking about, there was a clear polarization, or even rift, you could say, between German and French-speaking Switzerland. How do you explain that?
Well, the rift is quite normal, but in fact, in the vote on the two issues, it was less marked than it has been before. You could really say the main problem regarding the taxation is a town-country split. For instance, all the country areas were massively against the tax initiative of the Social Democrats. The urban areas like Geneva and also Basel City were for it. The split was more urban country rather than the language divide.
Though on the issue of the expulsion of criminal foreigners, there I think the difference was rather dramatic.
The difference there was along the classic Latin liberal attitude of the French-speaking Swiss vis-a-vis the Italian or German-speaking Swiss, yes.
And I guess the French-Swiss would sit there over their glass of wine and say, well, the German-Swiss are all xenophobes. Is that overstating the argument?
Well, I'm quite sure that sort of talk is around. I think it's just that the one has to see that the French-Swiss, the only foreigners they have practically in their part of the country are French speakers, whereas the German-speaking Swiss have all sorts of Balkan nations speaking no German at all. So in other words, the rift between the Swiss and the non-Swiss is far greater in German-speaking Switzerland than it is in the French-speaking part of the country.
A very good point, and to follow up on that, we're talking specifically of, for example, a place like Geneva, which has a large population of international civil servants, and also lots of rich people with their estates and villas along the Lake of Geneva. So they're obviously not going to cause much trouble.
Absolutely, yes.
Peter Holler, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and analyst, thank you very much. For a change, we're not out on the road somewhere, but I'm actually speaking from my home in the Emmental, east of Bern. That's where they make the famous Emmental cheese, among other things. And I have a couple of guests today. Hello, Bob Thoman. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you also, Bob. But the first thing I came in, I was shocked when I saw you antennamas being so standing crook over there. We have to make a field day one day to get it right again.
Well, we're talking ham radio now. That's for the long wire antenna. And the reason why the mast is crooked is, among other things, the heavy winds that we get up here at 750 meters, 2,500 feet. And welcome to another old friend and former colleague. We all know each other from the International Swiss Radio going back many years, and now a contributor to Switzerland and Sound as well, Peter Holler. Peter, nice to see you. You are a more regular visitor here. You come by every once in a while just to chat. You're retired like I am, technically.
Yeah, what surprised me was at 750 meters above sea level, as you said, but not one bit of snow. It's all green here. I was thinking on the train, it can't really be the beginning of spring, can it?
It could be the beginning of spring, but we also might have very heavy snowfalls right around the corner. The weather can change here very quickly, as you well know. You know, we're recording this in the winter of 2007, just after the new year, and of course, things could change. A week from now, we could be plowing snow here. But the reason we all got together is because this is the classic time for fondue, cheese fondue. And we're going to have it here. We just decided to get together, have a sort of a class reunion, drink some delicious fondant white wine from southern Switzerland, and I've got a recipe locally, which we could talk about, but what do you say we adjourn to the kitchen? Cheers.
And beers.
No, you do not drink beer with fondue. Have you ever made that mistake, Peter?
No, and I think another no-no-no that should be spoken out is cold mineral water is also a no-go because it gives you a clump in your stomach. What you can, however, drink is any kind of hot tea.
Yeah, very true, very true. White wine, I guess the classic would be white wine, and a Swiss white wine, not for marketing purposes, but simply because the white wine is actually part of a good cheese fondue. There are one or two obscure recipes that do not require wine, but the real recipe, the genuine classic, requires white wine. And Swiss white wines, like the fondant, for example, and so many others that are available here on every supermarket shelf, are very dry, very fruity, and slightly pétillant, as the French would say. A little bit of gas, just a tiny bit, to make them sparkle a little bit, very interesting. And they lend so well with cheese.
I have an acquaintance, Bob, that swears high and low that the cheese and the fondue comes very fine out with Süßmust, with ciders.
Sweet cider. As a matter of fact, my daughter, Diana, number two, has tried it, and she says it's good. But I'm sorry, I'm too much of a traditionalist. I got to have wine.
You also have to say that if you drink cider with fondue, either Montezuma's Revenge or the Benghazi Foxtrot may ensue.
The Green Apple Quickstep is another version of that. And, you know, to go back to this theme of no beer with fondue, there's a very good reason. It's not some kind of obscure gastronomic prejudice. There's a very good physical reason. It tends to clump in the stomach and create terrible digestive distress. Well, we've taken a little bit of a break here because I had both hands full in the kitchen preparing the fondue, and I got myself a mixture, not just from anywhere, but from one of the local cheese dairies. I asked different people over the years about cheese fondue recipes. Bob, you're eating away there, and so am I whenever I can. We're talking here as we're eating. And, you know, discussion and fondue go hand in hand. I mean, it's one of the most fantastic ways of getting into a discussion. You eat a little bit, you drink some, you talk. Do you have a favorite fondue recipe, or does your wife have one?
Not really, but I had a colleague in the gliding club here. He has a cheese ladderly in
little cheese shop.
Cheese shop there, and he specializes. And a lot of my colleagues, they swear high and low that this is the best fondue mixture you can get. So wherever you go, there will always be a best.
Like everybody's wine is always the best.
That's so. But it was interesting, I mean, to let people know, and I've been looking over your shoulders when you were putting the spices in that fondue. And of course, first of all came black pepper and muscat.
Yes, that's nutmeg in English.
Nutmeg.
Yeah.
Okay. That came in, and then this red power, what was that to
that was a little paprika.
That to heat up the fire a little bit.
Yeah, but it was sweet paprika.
It was sweet paprika.
Something else in there, too, a sprinkle of Herbe de Provence, the classic herbal mixture of Provence in southern France. This is something that my neighbor taught me once, who spent a lot of time in France. He thought it was an improvement. I don't know if you noticed it or not, but it's quite pleasant, I think.
Yeah,
there's lots of garlic in there, too.
Garlic, yes, of course. When you lose that piece of bread right now, what you did, you're in for a new bottle of wine.
And you're in mixed company, then you get a kiss, or you have to give all the ladies a kiss. I say the ladies. I mean, that's for sure. Yeah, I should. But Bob, I have. You can have another bottle of wine. It's all here. I've taken care of it.
You have to dry it.
Yeah, but wine is very, very important to it. Garlic is very important. We'll try to get a sort of a standard recipe up here on the website. Peter, what about you? Do you have a favorite recipe or a favorite kind of fondue?
No, I'd just like to make two comments. We've been blurting out about garlic, but I think one should say that the traditional Swiss method is when you have the cacolon, or the stoneware pot in which you make the fondue, normally the Swiss will take a clove of garlic and slice it in half and rub it round the whole surface where the cheese will come later, and afterwards, depending on how much you like garlic, slicing it and putting it in the fondue. The other comment is, I suspect that one of the reasons why we put a lot of different herbs and seasonings into fondue is because today's cheeses are probably not as strong tasting as they were a long time ago, mm-hmm. Because we now refrigerate them too much. Tell your theory.
Excuse me, I'm chewing.
What I've heard, a good add-on also should be mushrooms. Have you ever heard of that?
My daughter does that. She uses mushrooms instead of bread. Of course, that's the classic way. You take a fresh, fine bakery bread, a good one, not the kind of spongy stuff that you often get. It has to have some consistency. It should be able to get up and walk around on the table on its own. And we cut it into cubes. But a lot of people use mushrooms instead of bread to dunk into the mixture, right?
Well, I've never tried
that. Or a pineapple, too. I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, the field is open. You can try whatever your heart desires.
Well, I can tell you, I asked the man up at the cheese dairy. It's the Chlirolt, Chazerei Chlirolt, in the local dialect. And he's won awards. He's gotten a very small cheese dairy. I went in there this morning after a hike up in the mountains and around the village, and I told him I needed some fondue, and there he was. He was sealing fondue packages of his own mixture. There must have been an army corps in there wanting fondue, because he's very good. And I asked him, well, what do you do? And he said, I use about roughly two-thirds of the mixture is a good, salty, well-aged Gruyere, which they don't make here, but it comes from neighboring Fribourg, which is very, very close. And then he puts in a nice piece of Appenzeller to give it a nice little bite. And the Appenzeller, as we know, is a very well-spiced cheese. It's has an herbal base to it, which is very nice. And then, the influence from Fribourg, the Vacherin. And this gives it a very creamy substance to it. But, you know, I think also, if you can't get the fresh cheese, some of the commercial mixtures that you can buy in supermarkets, I see them in the States, I'm sure in England and other countries. I don't know if you had any, Peter, but they're quite good, actually.
Yeah, I think actually you have to find out which one suits you best, because there's usually two or three brands to choose from. But in the case of these factory-produced fondue mixtures, I think they certainly need gingering up with the seasonings we've mentioned before. And, of course, then you can do it according to your taste. But certainly I would also say that black pepper and garlic, for me, are the two essential seasonings.
I can't imagine a good fondue without either of these, especially. I happen to like garlic. And some people, I've made it also for the family, said, my God, it stinks of garlic. But it's something I learned there in the La Gitane, a restaurant in Neuchâtel, in western Switzerland, on the lake of Neuchâtel years ago, that was purported to make one of the best, if not the best, fondues in Switzerland. And he said, throw out all the recipes. Just throw lots of garlic. Throw lots of wine in there. And, that's what I basically do, and it comes out all right. I think, though, Bob, that the one thing about fondue, which it really doesn't matter so much how good it is, as long as you don't get sick on it, but it's the, as you would say in German, Gemütlichkeit, the coziness, the friendly atmosphere that you have among friends when people get together. It's just a nice thing to eat, and it promotes discussion and friendly feelings.
Yes, and especially if we have guests from England who for the first time taste fondue, or even the other recipe, which parallel to the raclette, which would be another form of a cheese meat. But Bob, I just lost one of my breads in there. Where are the girls? I'm supposed to kiss them. The girls!
As Bob is about to get out of line, I thought I might raise a question about getting out of line. There is a version of fondue which could almost be called a perversion, and that is chocolate, milk chocolate fondue.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of that? I think it's too heavy, but I mean, the very idea, it should be really stamped out, because, you know, it's like sardines and condensed milk.
Yeah.
They don't go together.
I mean, there may be few people still hang on to it and like it, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I mean, everything has its place and its purpose and its use, but to me, if you mentioned fondue, and I think if you mentioned fondue in the average Swiss household, there's only one thing comes to mind, and that's cheese. Of course, there are variations which, again, had nothing to do with cheese. One is the so-called fondue bourguignon, which is meat. And then, as Bob said, there's raclette, which is another favorite. I mean, a lot of people are very seriously divided on which is more fun, fondue or raclette. Raclette simply means, this is definitely from Canton Valais, which is, you know, almost a sister canton. It's not far from here. They take a big hunk of wheel or a half a wheel of cheese. They make smaller wheels there. And then they will heated up in front of a grill or coals, and then scrape the molten cheese into a plate. You eat that with pickles or gherkins and onions. We also have those things here too. It can be with fondue, potatoes. Absolutely, exactly. And then there's something else which is also a very nice favorite. It's somewhere between raclette and fondue, and that's what the French would call croûte au fromage, or in German, Käseschnitte, where you take a hunk of bread, really nice Swiss bakery bread. You souse it in wine, white wine, put, well, different kinds of cheese. It could be, I mean, if you talk about Valais again, they would talk about the Gomser cheese from the Valais Goms as being their favorite. Otherwise, you can also put cheese fondue mixture or raclette cheese, which is from the more from the Jura or neighboring French area. You bake that in the oven. I like to put fried onions on top, and you have got yourself a meal that you'll never forget. Anyway, cheese is very much at home in Switzerland, and everybody talks about fondue. Well, here is an example of how we live fondue and that tradition. Bob, Peter, thank you so much indeed. And we'll turn off the microphone now and finish the rest of that fondue pot. What do you say? Cheers to you all.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.